If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light of the most radiant one. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. We are a show that's dedicated to serving our celestial emissaries who are here on Earth assignment, expanding divine awareness, and ascending Earth. And tonight, we're going to be looking at exercising our divinity, the creative process of expectation. Get out your notebooks, because this is something that's going to be full of keys for you tonight. And the first one is that everything, absolutely everything, is energy and consciousness molded into form by our conscious choice of focus. Everything is energy and consciousness molded into form by our conscious choice of focus. You know, most people call people like me and ask them, what is going to happen in my future? In fact, I think if I put that on my website, I'm going to tell you the secrets of your future, I would have so many people calling me I wouldn't be able to accommodate them all. But I'm going to show you how to read your own future. How do you determine your own future? If you will answer these four questions for yourself, you will have the secret to your future. And the four questions are these. What are you looking at? What are you seeing? What are you looking for? What do you expect will happen? Really, seriously, what are you planning for? You know, you don't have to spend too much time in front of the boob tube, i.e. the TV, before you realize that most humanoids on planet Earth are planning for anything and everything but health, well-being, abundance, joy, cellular regeneration, transfiguration into immortal bodies of light, illumination, and living a life that is ascended, whole, and free, full of joy, full of peace, full of all good things. In fact, if you look at the television and watch the commercials, which I do actually just to laugh when I don't mute them, and it's a constant dreary liturgy of things that is projected upon this hologram you call a physical body, and this reflected imagery in this karma drama that you call a life, or not. If you're illumined, you're not calling it a life. And then planning all these, how to protect this illusion, how to keep it from imperilment of some type. So what approach we want to take as creative bearers of light is exactly the opposite. We want to be conspicuous by a walk that characterizes very different things that we're looking for, expecting to happen, noticing, making a big deal of by our focus. Because remember, the power of vision is the power of creation. the entire universe will rearrange itself to support your vision of reality. In fact, when you have those out-of-body experiences and you're soaring through the cosmos and you seem to be experiencing the different things floating by you, the scenery, the stars, whatever it is that you're traveling through, really what you're perceiving as you soul travel are the atoms actually rearranging themselves to support your inner expectation of what you wish to see on the inner planes. Yes, you who want to go up and spend the evening on Ashtar's ship, and you have that sense of leaving your body, sometimes as if you were shot out of a cannon. Sometimes it's very rapid. And you'll see all of these stars and galaxies and things whirling by you. Those are simply the atoms rearranging themselves to support your vision of reality. Does that mean that nothing is real? No. Everything's real. And at the same time, nothing is real. Yeah, you see, you have the double speak when you start to move into consciousness, because things are what they are, unless, of course, they're not. There are appearances in time and space which are transitory, and by my definitive, I don't call those things real. I call those things states of consciousness and energy in temporary forms of manifestation. Is there a real world? Yes. Beyond the realms that we call the worlds, the galaxies, the universes that are based on polarity and duality, there's a whole other creation. There's a creation beyond your inner worlds. There's a creation beyond as far as you could see with any kind of a telescope. Everything you see out of a telescope is already something that has taken place. You can't see anything as it truly is in the lower worlds. You can only see the past. You can only see what was. So to see truly, you have to move beyond the created worlds into the pristine divine worlds, which you and highest truth exist in eternally and have never departed from, nor could you depart from them. Why? Because you are part and parcel of the all that is that we call God. That means you can't separate from that. Ideas do not leave their source. That's a quote from the Course of Miracles. Ideas do not leave their source. Well, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? The concept that you have of yourself as a body in time and space is a thought form. It's a concept that you hold in your mind. And the atoms of energy and consciousness allow their rearranging so that every morning when you wake up expecting to see that same form in the morning mirror, there it is, shows up. Only we're actually in a time on the earth when we have, as light workers, made a conscious choice with a lot of help from the 70 brother and sisterhoods of light, and many, many celestial and planetary hierarchies and lords and ladies of light, we have made a collective choice to enter into a new version of the earth. This is what we call ascension. But ascension is an interesting thing. It doesn't mean that you're leaving the earth or leaving your body. It means that you are integrating that part of yourself in consciousness and in energy and in qualitative values from the realm of the real into this world that is like a distorted reflection in time and space. So we are always working with a molding of energy and consciousness so that it will take us experientially into that which we would have to be real for us. What do you expect will happen? I have people email me and call me continually asking me, what do you think is going to happen with this election? What do you think's going to happen with Nibiru? What do you think's going to happen in 2012? What do you think's going to happen when, you know, on and on and on? You know what? I don't give a fig. And if you really knew who you were, you wouldn't either. Why? Because you're the one that will decide what your experience of any of that is going to be. And only you will decide. And your experience, even though it may be within a collectivity of others having a similar experience, will be unique for you and you alone. Why is that? Because you are the only one that exists in your reality. You are the only one that exists in your reality. Well, where is God? Well, haven't we said all along that you are an extension, a ray of that divine love, clothed in a temporary form? You are God. You are the divine. Not the huge, overall, all that is God, but you are a spark, a ray, a portion of God, identical in every single aspect of God, except in terms of size. The quality of the essence of your life is identical to God. So that's why you can use the terms life, love, God, the self, the spirit, and they all mean the same thing. So again, the process that we're looking at here is beginning an active process of exercising our creative expectation, our divinity, and our ability to co-create life exactly as we would have it be. So you begin here this evening and afterwards when we're off the air to search your life, your mind, your heart, and what it is that you pay the most attention to. What do you notice? What are you always thinking about? What are you always talking about with your friends? And on the telephone, what do you write in your emails? What is the, if I was going to say, well, what's the bottom line of your communiques day in and day out? Are they about the ascended life? Are they about the illumined consciousness? Are they about the goodness and the love of a wonderful God and a magnificent open-ended creation? In other words, where are you putting the coinage of your life? Where are you spending your life? Well, this life goes by really, really fast in this third dimensional manifestation. And whether we transfigure our body through cellular regeneration, or we put on immortality, as it says in the Bible, in a twinkling of an eye, or we're raptured, which is kind of the same thing, or we're beamed up by Ashtar, or we have a dimensional translocating into a higher dimensional version of the Earth, we are going to leave this particular embodiment and how it looks right now and exchange it for something greater and grander, whether it's through the process of dying and moving into another level, or taking this level that we have right here that we're sitting on and in and beginning to raise the frequency until it becomes that of light and disappears from this level. In the early days of my workshop, when Ashtar and I first started doing workshops, we were on a preliminary reconnaissance for a period of time. I had just integrated into this body and I didn't have a clue how to go about my mission. So the first thing I did was to look and see what people believed, what they were studying, what they were doing. And when I came into the body 20 years ago, mostly people were very much involved and enamored with channeling. And they were also had a lot of ideas about ascension and envisioned it as being something quite supernatural, where all of a sudden we were just going to somehow, poof, turn into these beings of light. Or the other scenario was that we were going to be beamed up on the Ashtar command ships and somehow supernaturally changed and then put back down into our body. And then we would walk through the walls and levitate and materialize money and food and whatever. Sound good in theory, I suppose, but here it is 20 years later, and most of us are not doing those things. And if we are, unless we're living in India where they have made allowance for that type of behavior, you're probably in some padded cell somewhere or being fed some sort of chemicals to make you more normal. So the truth is that we are being changed bit by bit on many, many levels, but the whole planet is, everything. Your telephone is even ascending. Everything is in the process of returning to energy and consciousness of a higher level. Everything is exercising and being released into a new form. Every single person is on a spiritual path. There's no such thing as a person who is not spiritual on a spiritual path. The one thing that no one really is a human being. Now, isn't that crazy? Everybody goes around saying they're human. That's not true. You are divine. You're a spiritual being. You're living a spiritual life. I don't care if you're taking drugs and lying in a gutter somewhere, or you're sitting in the Himalayas in Samadhi. The life is spiritual that you're living, and you're having experiences as a soul that you have requested, you have created, allowed, promoted, prayed for, planned before you embodied, to look at something that you wanted to understand more clearly about yourself, about life, or about others so that you could serve them better. So nothing that you could possibly ever go through is something that you are a victim of, that you have not had a hand in producing into your life, even if it's something really horrible. We have many people here in the United States that just had a tornado swoop, 33 tornadoes swoop down on their house on an evening when they're watching and trying to decide who to vote for in the primaries and the caucus gatherings. And the next thing you know, they're either dead or they're riding in a current of wind and being slammed into some pile of debris, and their house is a bunch of matchsticks. Well, they sure didn't plan that, did they? Uh-huh, they did. On some level, that soul made a choice. Oh, not consciously out of the human levels. Who would choose that? But at some level, there was a conscious operative from that particular entity that agreed to come into that type of intense schooling situation. And we will call it an intense schooling situation because, get it and get it clearly, you are an eternally living being. You are never going to die, ever, ever, ever. It's impossible. People try to commit suicide to escape from life. Wrong. You just have a little bit of time on the inner planes where you're schooled to have a better go at it next time, and then you're put back in a lifetime that's exactly the same type of situation, and you have to face it anyway. So you might as well tough it out and face your creations and make the best of them and make more excellent choices. Do you realize that you are weaving tomorrow's garment today? Yes. Your beliefs are shaping your life. And so the life that you're wearing today, the garment of today, is the garment of yesterday's weaving. You weave it with every thought. Every thought is a strand. Every belief is a strand. Every expectation is a strand. And so you're designing your future wardrobe right now. It's done to us according to our beliefs. What do you believe about yourself? About life, about God, about the universe, about the future, about this world. Many people are advocates for change. Do you realize that you cannot change anything but yourself? Absolutely nothing. Why? Again, you're the only one that exists. You're the consciousness and energy that is molded by choice of focus that produces your experience of the world as you live it, as it has woven itself around you through your thoughts. So the future, my beloveds, can only be changed from within. The world can only be transformed from within. Everything that you would ever create in your outer world starts with a shifting of your inner consciousness and your inner energy. Tonight I would like to teach you how to do spiritual exercises. Many people do not take time to go within and be creative because they don't know how. Or if they do know how, they've been practicing these kind of meditations where you have to sit and do a boring mantra for an hour or two or three, and your mind wanders and nothing happens and your life remains the same. Or you feel a little bit of peace and then you get up and you still have the freeway and the jobs and the irate boss and the yelling kids to deal with. So I'm going to teach you spiritual exercises that will be much more proactive and much more effective and a heck of a lot more fun. These are things I practiced for 40 years. They worked for me. They'll work for you too. First of all, don't spend a lot of time doing these things. Keep them short. When I was with Sai Baba in India, the hardest thing to find in India was a quiet place to sit and meditate. Now that may seem like a total oxymoron, and it certainly seemed like that to me. Sai Baba's ashram in 1972, and well, even today, was the noisiest, most active place I'd ever been in. Here you have people from all over the world speaking every known language and tongue, living in very, for Western standards, very difficult living conditions, although now today they're really, really nice compared to the rough camp out it was in 1972. But I would have to climb way, way up in the mountains, well, not mountains, but hills with these huge boulders to get away from this clatch of people that was congregating and milling around trying to see Sai Baba's body. Well, I knew that Sai Baba was more than his body, so I was a little bit ahead in the game there. But I'd go all the way up into the rocks, which I found out later were just filled with cobras and scorpions and the size of lobsters and and very large toads. I encountered a toad. I swear that toad weighed at least 20 pounds. So they had some pretty odd things roaming around those rocks. But I didn't care. I went up and I'd crawl on those rocks and I'd sit like a yogi and have meditations. Well, in those days, I was really, really into long and lengthy meditations. But then meditation came easily for me, so it was no biggie. And then for 15 minutes in the evening, Sai Baba would open up his smaller temple and allow the Western devotees to go in and sit and meditate for, guess how much, 15 minutes. That was it, 15 minutes, and then we would be herded out. I didn't understand why that was so, and Sai Baba, of course, explained why it was so, because none of us are doing anything but sitting and letting our minds be monkey minds, jumping from branch to branch of thought and thinking about this and that and the other thing. We're thinking about everything, but who are we? Why are we here? Why have we come? What is our purpose? And how are we going to move forth from this world into the next? He said, when you think of those things, you are truly meditating. Otherwise, you're wasting time. It's better that you do an active meditation, which is to engage yourself in service to the world and to other people and offer the fruit of your action to God. That is far better than sitting and just letting your mind wool gather. So the exercise I want to teach you tonight is one which is not going to take a lot of time, but I want you to be able to have active inner meditative adventures. That's what we're looking for. Creating adventures on the inner self, in the inner planes, within your inner universes. Now, these are similar to guided meditations, only the difference is you're not being guided by someone outside of yourself or a tape or a video or whatever. you are actively involved in working within your own inner worlds and levels of consciousness. So to begin with, just be comfortable. You don't have to sit cross-legged. You don't have to sit in Padmasana. You don't have to do anything exotic. You can sit in a chair. You can, in fact, the best place for spiritual exercises is a lounger. Why? So your body can be so comfortable it is out of your attention. You want to forget that you have a body. You don't want to go to sleep, but often at some point when you lose the phenomenal universes within and you move into the non-phenomenal, usually you will go unconscious at that point because there's nothing for you to cognize. And the mind loses interest and it tends to shut off. But you can train yourself to stay aware as a spirit and have dreamlike, very, very vivid, very realistic dreamlike experiences in your inner self while your body is snoring away, you're wide awake inside. And that would be the ideal that we want to head for. But if you fall asleep, don't worry about it. There's no wrong way to do spiritual exercises except not to do them at all. So make your body comfortable so you don't have to think about it. And then focus very gently on your third eye. That's looking behind your eyelids. Very gently. Don't try to force anything. And simply chant out loud, "Hu." And then as you do that, at some point, the hue will go inward. And then you begin to listen for the sound within. You'll hear it like crickets or chirping of birds or wind chimes or like the conch shell or the surf or wind in the trees or even a flute. This is the soul realm when you hear the flute. You'll hear different sounds. You can train yourself. I'm doing this radio show right now, and I can hear the sound so loud in my head. So you don't have to be quiet, and you don't have to have a quiet world around you once you have identified the sound of God within you. That is what is called the Surat Shabd, the sound current, the living word, or the Holy Spirit. And that is the connection that you have eternally with God. You're always connected to God through this sound. You will also see different things, perhaps different colors will float through and different maybe even imagery. Don't worry about what you see. Just keep chanting and keep looking very objectively, very detached, very just kick back and watch whatever shows up. Don't make any big hoop-de-doo out of it. Just look at it. Let it go. Just let it pass through. If you see a blue star, a purple or purple rose, or a purple anything, or a blue anything, those are the energy forms of color that the spiritual traveler assumes when you are first connecting with that lineage of masters that I've told you about that take the soul beyond the realms of entrapment into the God worlds beyond. Those are called spiritual travelers, and they appear on the blue or the purple or violet color. And those are the ones that will take responsibility for you. Why do they appear as a light? They will appear as a form only if you are initiated by one of those masters and you know what they look like, and then you can visualize a form. If you haven't visualized the form to where you've given that mold, okay, that the master can flow into, then they just appear as a light. And it doesn't matter. Okay? The light works as well as the form does. Form only pertains to necessity within the realms of the ascended masters. They have immortalized their forms. Some of them have. Some of them step in and out of form as the occasion dictates. Not everyone wears a form that looks solid in the inner realms. It depends on what dimensional plane you're working on. So anyway, as you sit and you listen to the sound and you look for the light, begin to move into your ideal of yourself as an ascended being. Mock it up and imagine your ascended masterful self, your Christ self, your Buddha self, your Krishna self. That self that you know you are on a higher level. If you don't know you are that on a higher level, then pretend like you know. And what if you did know? And just go with it for the sake of a spiritual exercise. Move into your ascended masterful self. Imagine how it would feel to be completely ascended, whole, fulfilled, and free. See your body transformed into radiant, young, perfect, beautiful in every aspect, detail. See yourself as you'd like yourself to be, ideally. There's no limitations here. This is your world. This is your creation. You can have it your way. But really work it up. See, feel, touch, taste. Use every one of your senses to make it as real as you possibly can and as tactile as you can. Create this ideal image of yourself and make it more real than your reflected hologram that you call yourself here in the physical world. And then just simply act as if. When you come back from the spiritual exercise, then begin to act as if. Mock it up. Walk it out. Enact it. Keep putting your focus and your attention and your energy into that. You'll be ascended before you can even probably notice that you've moved to the next version of the earth. You just simply will suddenly be in a very, very different state. Now, don't do it any longer than, oh, maybe five. If you're not experienced with meditation, maybe 5 minutes. Work it up to 10, then 15, then 20. And probably 20 minutes is as long as you ever need to do it, unless you really aren't getting into it and really enjoying it. Make it fun. Keep it short, keep it powerful, and make it fun. And create it in different contexts. Have different adventures. You can literally use any kind of an imaginative process for a spiritual exercise. A spiritual exercise is simply moving and exercising your inner awareness. So you can, there are books that you can get that, in fact, Ekankar puts out a wonderful book that has 110, I think it is, or 101 different spiritual exercises. And it's called the Spiritual Exercises of Ek, E-C-K. And you can use something like that to give you ideas of how to have adventures in yourself and how to practice this inner awareness. But eventually you'll be so skilled you'll be able to make up your own adventures and have your own way of working with yourself, because nobody knows yourself better than you. So make this work for you in terms that you really love. And when you find something is a little boring or has gotten a little flat for you, then shift the energy. Shift it in a different way. Try chanting different things. Try all sorts of different experiments in your inner self until you find those keys of consciousness that begin to open up your inner levels. This is intensely fun, and as you do that, you start building what's called the inner bridge, the rainbow bridge, or the Antahkarana, which is the inner connecting points of consciousness. And this will allow you to be conscious when you're out of body. This will enable you to have created a highway and a bridge from your conscious self to your subconscious, to your unconscious, and to your superconscious, so that you maintain a continuity of awareness as you move in and out, forward and backward, through your levels into the inner self and then outward into the outer world. Then as you integrate those levels into your daily life, that's what it means to integrate yourself as a master, to begin to exercise conscious divinity and conscious self-realization and conscious Christ consciousness. This is the ideal. So, happy traveling. And that process is called soul travel, or the movement of spiritual inner awareness. And those are very good terms. I call them exercising your divinity. So the second value of this is that you're gaining your own experiences of self-realization. You know, you will always doubt something that you hear or receive secondhand. Did you know that? People sometimes contact me and they say, oh, I have all these doubts. I don't know what to believe. It's like, well, You doubt because you haven't really checked it out. You haven't really made it your own. You're trying to follow someone else's teaching or some book or something somebody said, and that may not fit you at all. In fact, it seldom does. I haven't found anything that really fit me. I've had to make my own path, a little pinch of this and a pinch of that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, it's like making a stew. And make it work for you. So doubt always accompanies secondhand information. You can only know for certain when you apply the information, check it out, and experience it for yourself. So don't let me hear any more about doubt. Those of you that are listening to me and that have chosen to study with the Ashtar Command in this format that we're using here in these weekly classes, doubt means you need to make it your own. Quit being a follower. Realize the information for yourself. Does it work or doesn't it? And if it doesn't work today, don't cast it out. It might work tomorrow. Likewise, when you hear somebody saying bad things about a guru or a teacher, you know, if you're doing good work in this world, you are for sure going to be attracting the brickbats. It's just the nature of this world. So when people say negative things about your teacher, don't let that create doubt. Simply ask yourself, okay, what's been my experience? What has been my experience with this teacher or this group or this teaching or this information or whatever? Because now we're getting all the witch hunt going again, where everybody's seeing everybody as a demon or the Antichrist or this or that or the other thing. Don't go there, for heaven's sakes. Check out the information for yourself. If it works, who cares who said it? If it works, it works. And if it doesn't, who cares what says who said it, because it doesn't work, at least not at this time for you. So self-realization is just that. You realize for yourself what is your own inner reality. And then as you begin to move in the choices, selective choices, do you know it's been said that even the tiniest little alteration you make in your daily life that's beneficial will have a repercussive blanketing effect on every other area of your life. For example, you start getting up every morning and you're going to have to discipline yourself. You're going to have to go to bed in an hour so that you can have that minimal seven hours of sleep that we all need to have good health. You're going to have to discipline yourself to do that and get up in an early enough time so that you can have your time with God. You're just going to have to discipline that lower self to do that. I remember when I used to have to be at work at 8, my gosh, I'd set that alarm for 5:30 so that I could have plenty of time to have a leisurely coffee and leisurely breakfast and my prayer time and my mantra time and my meditation time and my yoga time. I was doing the whole nine yards for many years in my earlier training in this work. And you can do it too. It just depends on what's important to you. If you want to realize who you are and exercise your divinity, that's going to need to take a great deal of your conscious choice of focus. And that means you're going to have to set aside some of those things that are for souls that are perhaps not on the last lifetime as many of you are. Many of you either have come back in time from an ascended state, or you're on your last lifetime, or you're nearing that last lifetime, or it could be your last lifetime if you really, really focused and chose that and made that what you were expecting. When not being realized in this lifetime is no longer an option for you, when that becomes the most important thing in your life, is to know the self and to be free, to be spiritually free and free within and free without. When that is your goal, I'll tell you, you will really, really make some excellent choices in your life and how you spend the coinage of your life and how you invest your time and your focus and your energy. You can do it. I did it. I was a single mom and worked two jobs at one point to support my family. And still, I always had time to do the spiritual exercises and the meditations and the things that I was doing in different stages of my life. And you can too. So, I'm pretty excited. Actually, I had a really awesome experience last night and this morning. Again, there was my favorite movie was on, which is The Day the Earth Stood Still. If you haven't seen it, go to any probably video place and rent it. It's a black and white movie that's set in about the latter part of the 40s. It's an old movie. It probably was made in the 40s. And I think, personally, it's the true story of how Valiant Thor landed on the lawn in Arlington close to the White House and brought forward a message to this planet Earth from Venus. In fact, there's so much truth to the movie that I really realized that it had to have been based on a true story because there were too many accuracies in the movie. For one thing, the spaceman looked and acted exactly like Ashtar, like Valiant Thor, like the commanders that I have known and loved for years and that many of you have as well. The whole deportment, the whole demeanor of the actor that played Klaatu, who was the spaceman supposedly from Mars in this film, his whole deportment, the way he carried himself, the way he spoke, the way he stood when he went on his spaceship and how he would move his hands over the controls to activate them. It's exactly what we do. The technology that they had aboard his ship is exactly the technology we have. Everything about his character was completely true and accurate. And even the message that he gave, basically that our immaturity and squabbles on our planet and our use of nuclear power to threaten other nations and to get our way or whatever on this planet in a negative and confrontational way would not be allowed to be exported to where it would jeopardize other planetary nations. Just that simple. Cease and desist or we will take you basically out. bottom line. So it was a very, very interesting experience watching that movie, which, my gosh, I have seen that so many times. I can't tell you how many. But each time, I don't know, it just gives me a great deal of joy as I recall the beauty in which we live in those higher levels aboard those ships and aboard those worlds that are based on love and peace and harmonious interaction, where there is absolutely no warring spirit, no aggression, no rudeness, no forgetting of the divinity in which we live and walk and exist every single day. So, anyway, I recommend you're taking some time and enjoying that film and using it as a meditation. I like to use everything as a spiritual exercise in my life, as a meditation to probe more deeply into the truth. They also had a really interesting program on discovery on chemtrails, different people's points of view about the chemtrails. They're having so many programs now that are educative. They had one last week on the submarine UFOs, the ones that go out of the water, USOs they're called. And there's so many. And, of course, they speculate that there are bases under the ocean. Duh, of course we have bases under the ocean. Before there was ocean, there was land, and we had bases on that land. So many, many things are coming to light nowadays. The chupacabras and the Bigfoot and the interdimensional beings and the astral world with the hauntings and the people that have had encounters with ghosts and things of that nature. For the first time, television, I believe, is really starting to become a school for consciousness, and it's being used correctly when it's being used in this manner. It's illuminating and educating people about the other planes and the other dimensions. And what's really interesting is that the Discovery Channel and the History Channel that has been airing these programs predominantly here in the United States, there isn't any of this poo-pooing or having an adversarial kind of person standing to put disclaimers. The information is all very affirming, and it's scientifically based, and it's almost as if for the first time the media presentation is trying to reinforce understanding rather than to create controversy. So it's exciting to me. I love to watch people awaken to their potential and to the truth and the beauty of the universe in which we live. This universe is awesome, awesome, awesome. It is teeming with life, and most of that life is godly and benign and beautiful. And the younger souls that are still in the adversarial types of mindsets are really not allowed to have very much interaction with us at all. The only time they can have interaction with people on Earth is when people on Earth have some sort of a karmic attachment or have given permission to nefarious spirits to have interaction with them, whether they're extraterrestrial or astral entities. So by and large, humanity is protected by the hierarchy from having negative experiences. And like I said, people who open themselves willingly through karma or through just being, foolish, that's the exception. You'll notice today there aren't any abductions that I'm aware of taking place anymore because the Ashtar Command has, since 1994, removed all of those aliens that were part of the government conspiracies to do that type of usury of people. I won't go into that in the show, but just know that most of that, when people are still, if they are, I don't know that they are, I don't usually have people contact me for that particular situation, but if people are still having abductive types of experiences that tend to be negative or are negative, then those are usually in the collective or the subconscious areas of that person's experiential inner reality, so that these would be areas that would need to be worked with in a healing therapy rather than trying to reinforce it as a reality that's actually occurring right now. There, again, make it your task to begin to do a little understanding of the illusion of time. The Course in Miracles people put out a really good book on the illusion of time. And there's other quantum mechanical types of books out there that go into the quantum universe and the time and how arbitrary it is and how it varies with perception. And time itself does not come out of the fourth dimension. It actually comes out of the human brain. So when you're out of the body or you're meditating, that's why you have a no sense of time. That's why you have missing time. You go beyond time when you leave the physical world, the physical brain, and the physical body. So, again, I have an hour, and it seems like the hour just flies by, and there's so much I always want to share, and I get really excited before I get to do these shows. It's just really fun for me to share information that helps us to be, to move more actively and more consciously into these wonderful realms of light that we are moving into very rapidly. As far as the elections go, you know what? Don't put so much energy into all of the rhetoric. Just study the candidates. Decide which one represents your interests and your values more perfectly. And when the time comes, vote for them. End of problem. Don't make that your whole career to focus on that. That's just one more karma drama that's going to do what it's going to do, and it's going to be what it's going to be. You as a light worker have the responsibility of asking in prayer and focusing on the highest good for the greatest amount of people on the planet. Let's ask for the highest good so that divine providence, divine will, divine guidance, divine intervention will assist us to make the wisest choices and will position people that are truly of the ilk of real leaders. And a real leader puts the interests of the people first. not themselves. We want someone who is going to advance our world into one of a greater embracement of all people and all life. We want to move more and more into a world where there's less and less boundaries of separation and differentiation. We all bleed red. We all have the Holy Spirit that has breathed the breath of life into us, and we are all temples of one living God, known by many names, worshipped by many forms. Nevertheless, it is the one and only source from which we've all come. So let's keep those kind of ideals before us and begin to move more and more with this new Aquarian energy, which is an energy of group, group coordinated efforts, group endeavor, and consensus group agreements as to what we as the forces of light on this planet would like to see happen in our world. I think we all want to see a world at peace, a world that works, a world in which the needs of everyone is met, a world in which all of our children can grow up and have happy and productive lives and to fulfill and exercise their divine potential. So let's hold those as our focus of what we expect to have happen. Let's expect that the warring machines will be turned off worldwide forever and for all times. Let's expect that we will not have any kind of Armageddon type of wipeout, atomic war. Let's expect peace. Let's focus on peace. Let's see peace. Let's envision peace. Let's see people stepping across the boundary lines and shaking hands and embracing each other and throwing down their weapons. Let's see all of this transform and make that the vision that we hold for our planet and our future. So these are some of the suggestions tonight for the creative process of expectation. Let's expect the best. Let's expect the best president possible to be voted into office. And let's expect us to have a dramatic breakthrough into the realms of greater harmony and brotherhood worldwide. Let's close our show tonight with a nice Hue chant. And you know what? I'm just grateful to be alive, and I hope you are too. It's such a privilege. You know, this is not the time to get mad. This is the time to get glad that we are called to love things whole, to see things healed, and to speak loving, healing, calming words, which will be creating less fear in the world and greater hope. Let's be those kind of people that do that. What do you say? Okay, you can use the Hue. You can chant it Hu, H-U, Hue, or you can vary it however you want. You can do it in short little bursts. Try experimenting with the Hue and see the many, many ways and nuances in which you can use it and find the one that really works for you. So let's go for it. Deep breath. Hue. Venusian, we say to you, Baraga Vasu, which in Venusian means in brotherly love. We greet and bless all of you from the United Forces of the Ashtar Galactic Command. I am Lady Athena, and speaking as one voice with Commander Ashtar, and sending great, great love to all of our fleets on Earth. God bless you, and God evening to all. Adonai. Thank you.
Radio.com.